O God, take our minds and think through them. Take our lips and speak through them. And take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen. Many of you have heard me talk before about the life-changing few days that occurred during my Anglican year of seminary in Virginia. 7 years ago today, on what was a Friday, I stood with my classmates and watched our seminary chapel burn down. The next few days included more tragedy in the midst of a traumatized community. And then 4 days later, on a Tuesday evening, my mom called to tell me that my dad had been killed in a car accident. In the days that followed, I learned the profound impact that shock can have upon our bodies and minds and souls as I walked through the swirls of events and emotions, but mostly was shrouded in a numbness that I had never before known. 2 weeks after my dad's death, I returned to school, and only a few days later, Jonathan and I drove back to New Jersey for our previously scheduled candidacy interviews, which determined whether or not we would enter the final stage of the process leading to the ordination to the priesthood. Had I been less numb, I probably would have been more nervous about trying to sound confident and coherent, but the truth was I felt so little at the time that I couldn't even be nervous. During the interview, I made my way through questions that ranged from theology, which I tried to answer from whatever memory I could summon, questions about the effect of losing a worship space on our community. Honestly, I hardly cared about that in light of losing my dad. To how I was feeling right then in the moment, to which I truthfully answered, I was too numb to have any idea how I felt. After a couple weeks of well-meant platitudes from he's in a better place to you'll be fine because you have your faith, I learned to politely make it through conversation with people who seemed so certain of things when it seemed to me that the whole world was spinning. I knew they meant well and were genuinely being kind, but the certainty that others seemed to offer and feel during that time, and the confidence with which I was expected to answer questions in that interview, was just foreign to me as I waded through a world that seemed like it had been completely turned over in a matter of days. But then during that interview, I was asked a question which I have never forgotten. I was asked, in all that has happened in the past few weeks, have there been moments of grace? It was a question not only could I answer, it was a question that helped me then and now look differently at what I was at times like the one I was experiencing. Even in the midst of my world spinning and feeling unbelievably numb, I had no doubt experienced moments of the deepest connections I had ever felt with those who walked with me through those days. I had felt more aware that I was loved than I had ever known. I was immediately able to tell the story of moments that were powerful and beautiful in the midst of that grief and loss. I thought of that question and the conversation that followed it as I studied today's passage from Exodus. This takes place shortly after the Israelites ask Aaron to form a god so that they can see for them, because it is too hard to worship and know a god that they cannot see. And so Aaron makes the golden calf for them. God gets angry at this and says the people can still have the land that God has promised them, but the presence of God will not go with them any farther. And so now we've come to the beginning of our passage where Moses balks at this new information. He tells God that he was told to lead the people out of Egypt into the promised land, but now he does not know who will go with them. He asks to know God, to know the future, what is going to happen. He wants to be certain of what is going on, much like the people needed the certainty of a God they could see. How often are we too like Moses and the people of Israel? As we walk through the challenges and struggles of life, we just want a clear picture of what's ahead. We want to know exactly how things are going to work out, how we will make it through. We struggle to believe God is really present. But we believe if we could just see God face to face, surely it would make everything more bearable. We would know the way forward, and we could at least be certain about God, and other things would be clear and easier as well. But God doesn't work that way now any more than God did in the days of Moses and the people of Israel wandering in the desert. God tells Moses that no one can see God face to face and live, but that doesn't mean God isn't present. Just as Aaron wasn't able to construct a piece of gold that truly represented who God was, God doesn't exist as we imagine either, as the certain answer that we so often want him to be. Instead, God tells Moses, "I will make all my goodness pass before you." God won't be still and meet Moses face to face as we think God should, certain and stable in the places we want. But God's goodness will pass by, and Moses will know that God has been present with him in the fullness of the goodness of God. And it seems to me that this is still how God works. If we pay attention, there are no shortage of possibilities to see that God is present among us. In my own experience, it often takes being in the hardest of times to slow down and let the veil of busyness that I live in fall away so that I really notice how frequently the goodness of God is present and passing right around me. When I really stop and pay attention, there is no doubt that God is there, constantly passing through and calling us on with the promise to be with us always. The struggle is that the presence of God is not always clear and certain for us or them. But it is there, and most often I have found that it is there in the other people who walk with us, which is what Jesus reminds us of in our gospel passage. In the gospel, the Pharisees come to Jesus to trap him. They ask if it's lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not, which was a controversial issue at the time. They were paying taxes to a foreign government occupying their land. Some Jews worked with that government, and so saying that it was not lawful to pay taxes could have gotten Jesus arrested for opposing the government. But there's also Jewish nationalists who believed it was against their law to pay taxes to foreigners occupying land that they believed God had given them because it acknowledged someone else might have a right to the land. Either way, Jesus would upset many people and could be in great trouble. So Jesus asks for the coin that is used to pay these taxes. Our translation uses the word head in his question, but the actual word is better translated, "Whose image is this?" After they answer the emperor's, he goes on to say, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." Now there are many discussions to be had in regards to this passage about the relationship between our duties to government and duties to God, and even maybe separation of church and state. But there is another theme that would have been very much in the minds of those listening to Jesus. Remember, most of these people knew the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, by heart. When he asks them whose image is on the coin, and they are told to give to the emperor what is in his image, and to God what is in God's image, they immediately would be thinking about what has God's image on it. They would be thinking about the first chapter of Genesis, when humans are made in God's image. Jesus acknowledges that it's not against the law to pay taxes to the emperor, but he completely changes the conversation in his answer. He reminds them that money may have the image of Caesar, but that each of them bear the image of God. We, like them, are to give to God our whole selves, and we are to live our lives aware of the image of God that resides in each person we encounter. And once again, that is a much less clear and certain way to live. It is much easier to determine whether it is right or wrong to pay taxes or any number of legalistic answers of things to do or not do in our lives. It is so much harder to live our lives every day determining how best to honor the image of God in ourselves and in everyone who we encounter. In my first years as a priest, I served at the church in Princeton, New Jersey that sponsored me for ordination. That was a wonderful experience for me, and it meant that I became a priest to the very people who had helped me discern that call to the priesthood. One of these people that I respected most was the head of my discernment committee, and I will never forget the first time he asked me to really be his priest. You might remember the news of the story from 2010 of Tyler Clementi, a young gay Rutgers student whose roommate set up cameras to watch him on a date and then shared those videos with friends in the midst of other bullying of him. Shortly afterwards, Tyler died by suicide when he jumped off the George Washington Bridge. And then shortly after I was ordained, the trial of the roommate who had videoed him, Darun Ravi, began. Not only was Rutgers less than 20 miles from Princeton, but Ravi was actually from the town next to Princeton and had attended the same high school as many of our students in our parish. In a place that prided itself on being very open and accepting of LGBT people, there was much anger towards Ravi, who mostly claimed that he had done absolutely nothing wrong. My friend, who was the head of my discernment committee, came to me and told me that he needed to talk to me as his priest. He was a gay man who had endured more than his fair share of bullying and suffering because of his sexual orientation. But he came to me and told me that he had been trying to find Christ, to find the image of God in Ravi, and was struggling to do so, and he wanted me to help him. I was stunned by his search. The truth was that amidst all the questions I had been wondering about Ravi and the environment that we lived and were raising students in there, it had never occurred to me to ask where we could see the image of God in this young man. We did meet and talk about it, but I'm not sure I offered a whole lot of wisdom as his priest. But I learned so much from him and his faith that somewhere in someone who even reminded him of so much pain, there still remained the image of God to be seen. I often think that seeing the image of God in each other means that I will probably glimpse God in the wonder of children, the innocence of babies, the beauty and kindness of an old soul that I meet as I go about my day. I expect to see God in those obvious, certain ways that are to be expected. But my friend reminded me then that God's image is truly to be encountered in anyone. It's much less certain, and sometimes it's almost impossible to find. But nonetheless, God is here among us and in us. And we must be aware and watching because we too need to truly see God in our midst. As an individual in a community, this must be our work, to constantly search for and be aware of where God is and is working among us. Perhaps we need to follow the way of the Ignatians, taking time each day to reflect on where we have seen God, having seen God's goodness pass through our lives, or catching a glimpse of God in someone we met, perhaps someone we least expect. This is part of why we're starting small groups, to share our stories, so that we can reflect how God has been working in our lives, and learn together where God might be working now, and calling us toward as a community. We must begin to make these and other practices part of our lives and of our very way of being, because I believe that many of us struggle often to see where God is present in the heartbreak we see every day in our world, and then in the daily struggle of our lives. We long for the sureness of the face of God, the certainty of how God will care for us, and what the way forward will look like. But to live like that, in that way of certainty, would never be faith. Like the Israelites, we are promised that God's presence will go with us. So let us go from here and keep walking together, watching for the goodness of God that passes by us in those moments of grace. And may we see and know that God is and was and always will be among us. Amen.